Here's a few quick notes about the show. Southern Girl Crime Stories is a podcast focused mostly on lesser-known true crime cases that range from murders, missing persons, cold cases, soft cases, and more. Please be sure to check out my YouTube channel for these stories, along with photos of victims, suspects, locations of murders, and more. Brianna Marie DeBautiste was born to Julie Hunt on February 20, 1989. In 2014, 25-year-old Brianna was living in the small town of Dunkirk, Indiana, and was described as a loving and kind individual. Unfortunately, she began using drugs at a very young age, which eventually led to a heroin addiction. She tried rehab multiple times, but always relapsed. In early June, Brianna was trying rehab once again, but by mid-June, she was already out and back to her old ways. Julie saw Brianna on the night of June 16th at a local Marathon gas station with a group of less than savory individuals buying a bag of potato chips. She told her mother that she had been receiving threatening text messages from a woman who was related to an ex-boyfriend of Brianna's. Her mother responded by trying to encourage Brianna to get away from the bad crowd she was hanging with, telling her it was the only way she had a chance at stopping her drug use. After parting ways, Julie would never see her daughter alive again. When Julie had not heard from Brianna, she reported her missing, and law enforcement began searching for her. That's when a 7-time felon by the name of Curtis Ray Neal would come forward and tell investigators she was dead and that he disposed of her body. Neal was in jail in Portland, Indiana, on charges of driving while intoxicated and unlawful possession of a syringe. However, when it came time to provide law enforcement with the location of Brianna's remains, Neal basically sent the police on a wild goose chase. Investigators would search the Red Carpet Inn, a home in downtown Muncie, and a nature preserve in Grant County. However, neither search produced Brianna's remains. 3 months later, on September 1st, 2014, bow hunters in the woods near a cemetery in Portland, Indiana, found partial human remains. Weeks later, their remains were identified as belonging to Brianna, but due to the state of her remains, a cause of death could not be determined. However, the coroner believes her death is most likely from an overdose. As for Neal, it's believed he made everything up. He was then charged with obstruction of justice and giving false information. Investigators are now trying to determine how exactly she died and who dumped her body. Whoever's responsible also took her shoes, purse, and cell phone, and as of 2023, those items have never been recovered and her case remains unsolved. Janet Rose Sherrar was born on March 10, 1951, and lived in Kokomo, Indiana. She was described as an outgoing, straightforward person who often spoke her mind. In 1980, 29-year-old Janet was living in a one-bedroom, ground-floor apartment at the Center Meadows apartment complex. She was also an extremely dedicated special education teacher who was finishing up her first year of teaching at the Bon Air Middle School. On Friday, May 23rd, Janet's day ended as usual, with her saying goodbye to her students and chatting with other faculty about their plans for the Memorial Day weekend. She had told them she planned to spend the weekend at her family's annual Memorial Day cookout and her nephew's birthday party. She had recently learned to drive a dump truck and was excited to spend her summer helping on the site of her family's home that was under construction in Carroll County. Sadly, she would never get the chance. After leaving school that day, Janet was never seen alive again. When Saturday rolled around and Janet failed to show up for her family's cookout, they were concerned but didn't raise the alarms until the following day when she missed her nephew's birthday party. So that evening, Janet's mom, Elma, who went by Rose, and her stepfather, Alvin, drove to her apartment to check on her. When they arrived, they found her orange Datsun B210 sitting in the parking lot with the driver's door slightly ajar. They tried her apartment door, but it was locked. They could, however, with the use of a flashlight, see her purse sitting in the middle of the living room floor. When Janet failed to come to the door, they called the office, which was in another location, and informed them of the situation. They were told they could come by and pick up a key, but Rose didn't want to leave, so she called a friend of Janet's to get the key and bring it over. Once the friend arrived, the three of them entered the apartment and immediately noticed there was no power to the apartment, and they were forced to walk around with flashlights. As they looked around the apartment, they found a blood-soaked towel on the floor, and her old whiskey keg that she used as a table was out of place. It looked like she may have been using the table to prop the door open, and with her car door slightly ajar, could she have been bringing in groceries? As they continued through the apartment, the friend and Alvin sadly found Janet in the bathroom and immediately rushed Rose out of the apartment before she could see her daughter's nude body. Janet had been stabbed more than a dozen times, leading investigators to believe her killer murdered her out of hate. They also found blood in her bedroom and determined she was stabbed there before retreating to the bathroom, where she ultimately died. However, they could find no signs of sexual assault. Another resident came forward and said they heard a scream at 3:30 a.m. on Saturday and then heard a small car start up and drive off. Unfortunately, all of the blood evidence collected from the apartment belonged to Janet, and none belonged to the killer. Janet was single at the time of her death, so investigators began interviewing past boyfriends, but none of them held any ill will toward her, and all of them fully cooperated with the investigation. There was a female suspect at the top of the list, but they never had enough evidence to charge her. On Friday night, May 23rd, Rose called her daughter to discuss a birthday present they were getting for her nephew, unaware that the suspect was in the apartment with Janet. The suspect even confirmed to Alvin that she was with Janet that night and was potentially the last person to see her alive. The woman then spent the next 16 months under intense scrutiny but was never arrested for the murder. Allegedly, at midnight, a friend of Janet's called her and the woman was still there. Around 3 hours later, Janet was murdered. Considering there was no sexual assault or forced entry, it's not unthinkable that her killer was the female who was with her at the apartment that night. In addition, it was proven that whoever stabbed her was much shorter than Janet, who stood 5'9". The only evidence linking the suspect to the crime is her being at the apartment before Janet was murdered. As of 2023, she remains the number one suspect, but has never been arrested, and this case remains unsolved. Joseph William Smedley II was born on March 27, 1995. When Joseph was in the third grade, his parents divorced and his mother moved to St. Thomas. After the divorce, he tried living with each of his parents, but was unable to get along with them. In 2012, 16-year-old Joseph, now a high school student, became legally emancipated from his parents and moved in with a close friend. In high school, Joseph played the trombone and was on the wrestling team. He was also close with his sister, Vivianne, who described him as extremely intelligent and someone who always put forth positive vibes. In 2015, 20-year-old Joseph was now a second-year pre-pharmaceutical science major studying biochemistry at Indiana University in Bloomington. On September 28th, at 4:15 a.m., Joseph's sister, Vivianne, received a strange text message from his phone that said he loved her and was planning to leave the country. The text also strangely said that he was not telling her the reason to keep her safe, but would get in touch once he was settled overseas. Thinking he was joking, she tried to contact him, but there was no answer. Concerned, she contacted the police and asked them to do a welfare check. In the meanwhile, his frat brothers noticed he had missed their fraternity meeting, which was unusual. After returning to the house, they checked his room and found a handwritten note similar to the message that his sister received, but this one said for his roommates not to contact him. The note was signed Smedley, which is how his roommates referred to him. When his sister was shown the note, she said the handwriting looked like a left-handed person had written it, but her brother was right-handed. Joseph would have also had trouble leaving the country because he didn't have a passport. When investigators were originally called, they checked police records and found someone in jail with a similar name. They called Vivianne, telling her they found him. However, after going back and forth with the police, she realized the man in jail was not her brother. When investigators arrived at the Sigma Pi frat house where Joseph lived, he was nowhere to be found. They searched his room and found all of his possessions there except for his cell phone. According to his frat brothers, the police had performed a quick search and left with only his laptop. One of his fraternity brothers said they had seen him the night before when they went to Griffey Lake to watch a lunar eclipse. However, when they got there, the cloud cover was too much, so they returned home. They arrived back at the house just before midnight, and all the roommates went into their separate bedrooms. This was the last time anyone set eyes on Joseph. The theory of him leaving the country would be put to rest 2 days later on October 2, 2015. A fisherman out on the Griffey Lake found Joseph's body floating face down with 66 pounds of rocks in a backpack strapped to his chest. He was also found with binoculars around his neck that were most likely used to look at the lunar eclipse on the night he went missing. The Monroe County coroner performed an autopsy and ruled that he took his own life by drowning, leading police to believe there was no foul play involved. His toxicology report showed that he had both THC and alcohol in his system at the time of his death. Vivienne found this ruling strange because the water was shallow and Joseph was a great swimmer. He also showed no signs of depression before his untimely death. She then went to the lake and tried to collect 66 pounds of rocks, but was unable to due to the lack of rocks around the lake. For the coroner's theory to work, Joseph would have had to walk 45 minutes from his house, load a backpack full of rocks, and then step off a bridge into 5 feet of water. Joseph was 5'7" tall and could have easily stood on the bottom of the lake. Law enforcement now considers the case closed, but his family believes foul play was involved. They started a GoFundMe and were able to raise money to hire a forensic pathologist to perform a second autopsy. That autopsy found that he had hemorrhages on his back that could be consistent with someone pressing down on him while he was drowning. Did something happen that night with his fraternity brothers, or did Joseph really take his own life? It's of note that Joseph's fraternity, Sigma Pi, was suspended in 2021 for hazing, endangering others, dishonest conduct, and failure to comply with university and county directives. While they were clearly putting their members in danger, there is still no evidence that they had anything to do with Joseph's death, and as of 2023, this case remains closed, but in his family's eyes, unresolved. Naja Farrell was born on October 14, 1988. In 2019, 30-year-old Naja was a mother of five living in Avon, Indiana. She was in a long-term relationship and engaged to be married, but no date had been set. Naja enjoyed spending time with her children, nieces, and nephews, and always had a group of kids with her. She had even decided to foster 3 children because she wanted to give back to children who didn't have anyone else. On March 12, 2019, she started her first day at Panera Bread in Indianapolis. On her third day of orientation, Naja left her apartment to make the 30-mile drive to work, but never showed up. Her shift started at 5 a.m., and surveillance footage showed her leaving the apartment complex around 3 a.m. It wasn't until she failed to pick her sons up from school that her family realized something was wrong. After her mom, Paula, was notified that she failed to pick the kids up, she tried calling Naja, but received no answer. After that, she contacted the police, and an extensive search for Naja began. Investigators performed ground and aerial searches around the city, but Naja was never located. 2 weeks later, her 2018 Nissan Altima was discovered in the Studio Movie Grill parking lot near the Panera Bread where she worked. Not long after that, construction workers called the police to report they had found some of her belongings scattered along I-465 near Lafayette Road, which included her ID and bank card. Then in April 2019, police got a call from the Crown Point Police Department in Crown Point, Indiana, about 2 hours away from Indianapolis, saying that they might have found something that could pertain to Naja's case. In a retention pond off I-65 and 109th Avenue, 2 fishermen found a human foot with Naja's name tattooed on it. Through DNA testing, they were able to confirm the body part belonged to Naja. Investigators searched the area, but no other body parts or remains were found. Investigators now believe Naja is deceased. Unfortunately, there have been no solid leads since then, and as of 2023, this case remains unsolved. Patrick King was born on January 22, 1963. In 1995, 32-year-old Patrick lived alone in Winslow, Indiana, and worked at Jasper Furniture Factory. On November 21st, Patrick left work at 3:30 p.m. and was later spotted getting into a gray car with two unidentified individuals. He was supposed to meet his girlfriend for a date that night, but he never showed up and has never been heard from again. The next day, Patrick's 1991 Ford Ranger was discovered on a dirt road in the wilderness area known as Snaky Point, near the Patoka River in Indiana. Inside his truck was human hair, a small amount of blood, and fingerprints. Unfortunately, this was in the early days of DNA, and the amount of blood found was not enough to be tested. Patrick's loved ones stated that he wouldn't have driven the truck to that location, especially since he had just had it painted and refused to drive it on gravel roads. It also doesn't appear he went to this location to hunt because his hunting license was found back in his trailer. 8 days after Patrick's disappearance, his girlfriend reported that a black and gray Oldsmobile rammed her car, fired shots at her, and one of them smashed out her car's headlights. She was thankfully unharmed, but the perpetrators were never caught. It is unclear whether this incident is linked to Patrick's disappearance. In 2009, 14 years after Patrick went missing, authorities obtained a search warrant for a home off South Meridian Road where a man named Kerry Thomas lived. A witness reported that Thomas had confessed to killing Patrick because he stole some of his guns. He said that after he murdered him, he buried his body beneath his garage floor. At the time of the search, Thomas was in Pike County Jail after threatening to blow up the county courthouse. During the excavation of the garage, over 160 gallons of bone fragments were recovered. However, after being sent off to a forensic pathologist, they were determined not to be human. Unfortunately, there is very little information, and as of 2023, Patrick has never been found, and this case remains unsolved. Thanks for joining me today on Southern Girl Crime Stories. Please be sure to check out my YouTube channel for these stories, along with photos of victims, suspects, location of murders, and more. As always, your support is very much appreciated, and I look forward to seeing y'all next time.